tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Tender, I want to invite you to do something more than just sit there and listen. I appreciate you listening, but I want you to dig in a little bit more. And really what we're requesting is that you would trust us with a free app. The app is called YouVersion. It's the way that I actually read the Bible every single day. But on this app, there's an events page that allows you to dig a little bit deeper with what you're about to experience. Specifically, there's a place to take notes. There's a poll of the week, and there's some other fun things in there as well. So I'd like to invite you. This is a series that you're going to want to engage with, and especially going to want to take some notes. So if you don't want to use YouVersion, that's fine. But make sure you take some type of notes, because this is really practical stuff to help you in where you're at with your family. And today we are continuing our series entitled Family Blueprint. And as a part of this series, we've started something new. And the new thing that we've started is we've been standing together and reading our scripture or our text together. And if you didn't grow up in church, if you're new to the church scene, this might feel weird to you. And you might be thinking, oh great, this is an occult. And I just want to tell you that this may be a little bit weird, but I want to explain to you why we're doing this. That for us, we really do believe that these scriptures have life-changing power in them. In fact, the description of the Bible is that it's living and active, and it's sharper than any two-edged sword. And that means that the scriptures that were written thousands of years ago, they speak truth to every generation. So even though they're thousands of years old, today in 2016, the scriptures can speak life to us. We can actually hear the voice and the words of God. But if we go into it thinking that this is boring, that this is outdated, that it can't speak to us, that we know it all, that we just want to be entertained, we're not going to be able to hear very much at all. And so what we're trying to do is show some honor to the text that we're going to engage with. And when someone important walks into the room, you often stand up to show them honor. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to stand to our feet and we're going to read the scriptures together. And I know that the second service is a little bit more chill. I don't know why. You have a chance to wake up. The caffeine's kicked in longer. But the second service is typically known as the frozen chosen, if you know what I mean. Like, the first service shouldn't be as awake as they are, but they are. But the second service, it's just a little bit more work sometimes. And I want you to prove the stereotypes wrong. I think that you're awake, I think that you're alive, and I think you're excited to be here. So who's ready? Yeah. All right, stand up to your feet. Stand up to your feet. We're going to read the scriptures. They're going to come up on the screen. 1 Corinthians 13, 6 through 7 says, love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Now that we've read the text, we want to ask God to speak to our hearts. And if you're new to the church scene, if you're not comfortable with praying, I'd encourage you to pray a simple prayer. God, speak to my heart and give me the courage to do whatever you tell me to do. Would you guys spend a few seconds praying? God, this is it. This is your moment. This is your chance to reach out and speak to us. And so we're just asking that you would challenge us, that you'd speak to our hearts. And God, I just ask that you'd remove the distractions from this building, remove the distractions from our own lives. God, some of us didn't get much sleep last night, and so would you just wake us up? God, for some of us, we're bringing in heavy burdens, and we've got a lot on our mind, and it's going to be so hard to listen to you. And would you just help our minds to focus just for a few moments? God, would you just say something personal to us? Would you give us the courage to obey you even when it's difficult? And God, I just ask that the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart will be acceptable in your sight. Oh Lord, you are my rock and my redeemer. In Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. The series, Family Blueprint, it is a progression. And what we're talking about is how to have a happy family. And just like a blueprint, if you're building a building, you can choose to ignore the steps, but I wouldn't recommend it. The blueprint that we've unveiled, and if you've ever been in construction, or even if you've watched HGTV, you know that they have a blueprint that they build, that they follow some steps. And on week one, we started with the foundation, that if you don't get the foundation right, everything's going to fall apart in your family. It's going to be incredibly shaky. And I know it was 2 weeks ago, but I believe in you guys. You guys are alive and awake, and you're sharp as a tack. So 2 weeks ago, we gave the foundation for healthy relationships. Would you just shout it out if you remember it? Yes, there was one really loud voice over there. Thank you very much. For the rest of you, I unconditionally accept you and love you even though you mumbled through that. That's awesome. The foundation for healthy relationships, unconditional acceptance. and unconditional love. Now, every week, we've got to spend a little bit of time talking about this, because if you get this wrong, you can't have the following steps. If this is wrong, everything else is just faulty and shaky in your relationships. And unconditional acceptance and unconditional love, it does not mean that you don't set up boundaries in your life. There are times in your relationship, that a healthy relationship, you must say, I love you for who you are, but I don't love this behavior. And you have to separate the behavior from the person. But in order to have a healthy relationship, the people in your life need to know, I'm not going anywhere. No matter what you choose to do, I'm committed to be in this relationship. I unconditionally accept you and love you. And if you're a parent, this is so crucial for you. Some of you have such a difficult time in relationships because you grew up in households where your parents only loved you if you did certain things. And you never received this unconditional love or acceptance. And so now it's just carrying out in all sorts of your other relationships. And you have the ability, if you're a parent, especially right now, if you're a parent of littles like I am, if you have little kids at home, like what you do is shaping them for their future relationships. And it's not easy. It's not easy. If you're a parent of little kids, if you're a parent of teenagers, probably even if you're a parent of grown kids, relationships with your family, it's not easy. They test us, they push us, they try us, and sometimes we don't even know what to do. It's not easy, but this foundation is so incredibly important. If you get this right, it'll set up so much more success in your other relationships. And oftentimes in the church world, when I preach a sermon, I think that God has a sense of humor, and He tests me by sending me sermon illustrations in my life just to see if I can handle, if I'm willing to back up what I'm talking about. And this past week, one of my family members tested me on this unconditional acceptance and love. I want to give a positive story before I give the kind of negative story, because if you come to Next Level, you've heard lots of stories about my son Hayden. His behavior often is very funny and inappropriate, and his bad behavior is what gives the best sermon illustrations. So I talk about his bad behavior a lot, but I want to just highlight, because he's not in the room, and I want you to know who he is, I want to highlight, he really is a good kid. Like, he is a great kid. And I just want to give you an example. Yesterday was his very first soccer game of the season, and he is so excited to play soccer. This is his third season, but it was his first game of this season. And one of the reasons he's so excited is because his twin sister decided to play soccer with him, and he's so excited about that. Not only that, he's playing with his best friend, who is his cousin, Brody. And he is so happy and so excited for them to play. And so yesterday on the way to the game, Hayden is talking about soccer and talking about the game. And he says to us, Mom and Dad, I just want to do everything I can to help Reese and Brody score a goal. Aww. I mean, that's the kind of kid he is. He is an incredible kid. But he is also on the emotional spectrum. He's a little bit more emotional, a little bit more high strung. He has to be very scheduled, and if he gets off his schedule for any reason, we all experience his wrath, and we all experience just the difficulties. He's a very much different temperament than his twin sister. Well, this week, he decided to take a stand, and I don't know why. I don't know if he was just tired. I don't know if he was grumpy. I don't know if something else was going on, but he took a stand, and he was refusing to eat his dinner. Now, I could sympathize with him if we were serving him something like lima beans or like okra that wasn't fried or like something gag nasty. I would commiserate with him. I would say, buddy, I feel your pain. I don't want to eat that stuff either. But we served him mac and cheese. And he put his foot down and he would not eat. And so I said to him, to be firm, I said, Hayden, here's the deal. I just got back from the gym. We're all done eating. I'm going to go take a shower. And when I get back, if you're not done with your food, you are going to bed for the rest of the night. Me and Reese and your mom, we're going to watch TV. We're going to have a bedtime snack. And we'll still tuck you in, but you're in your room for the rest of the night. Do you understand? Yes, I understand. I took a shower. I got ready. I came back in the room. He still was refusing to eat his mac and cheese. So I said, all right, buddy, you know the agreement. You need to go to your room. No, I don't want to go to my room. I'll eat it. And he takes a big spoonful like he's going to eat it. And I said, buddy, it is too late. You've got to go to your room. He slams the mac and cheese down. He hops down. And he starts walking through the kitchen, and he's making this noise. I said, Hayden, if you know what's best for you, you're not going to make another noise. You need to quietly walk back to your room. And he looks back to me, and he says, I hate you. And then he runs like he stole something. Like, he runs down the hallway, and like, so we don't use that language in our house, and that's not appropriate. We don't say that to people that we love. We especially don't say that to family members. So I walked down the hallway, and I laid in his bed next to him, and I tried to calm him down, and I said to him, "Hey, listen, Hayden, you never say those words to your family, ever. I don't ever want to hear it again. I love you. You can't stop me from loving you, but that is not appropriate. You do not say it. And because you said it, not only are you in your room for the rest of the night, but I'm taking out all your stuffed animals from your bed." Now, this is a big deal. His stuffed animals are like his best friends. They're like family. Like, he has all these conversations with them. He calls them his stuffies. And so I took out like 100 stuffed animals out of his bed, and I put them on the floor, and I left them there. And he starts crying immediately. And so I go into the living room to watch TV with my daughter and my wife, and we're watching TV. And after 15 minutes of just him hysterically crying, I decide I need to go check on him because I can't hear the TV. I mean, because... No, because he'd been crying for 15 minutes, and I wanted to make sure he was okay. So I walked into his room, and I put my hand on his back, and I said, "Buddy, are you okay? You've been crying really hard." "Yes." And I'm thinking he's about to apologize. He's realized what he's done. That's why he's crying. And I said, "Is there something you need to tell me?" And he said, "I'm just so sad, Daddy." And I said, I get it, buddy. What are you sad about?" He's like, "I just miss my stuffies." And I'm like, "I'm done with you, kid. I've given you so many chances." And so literally, I had to recruit my wife to go talk to him. And after she talked to him, it finally dawned on him what had happened. And we were able to come back and have a conversation. And he eventually apologized. And the next day, though, I talked to him again. And I said, "I don't want to drag this out. I'm not trying to make too big of a deal of this. But Hayden, you need to understand that what you said hurt Daddy's feelings. And we cannot say that in our household. I love you. And so if you choose to say that again, I'm not going to stop loving you. I love you forever. You can't do anything to shake my love from you. But you cannot say that without consequences in our family." And he got it. And it is so difficult when you have relationships with people, when you can't control other people, when you have little ones or you have siblings or you have people in your household. It is so difficult to give unconditional acceptance and love when they bring things to the table that challenge you. But it is such an important part of every healthy relationship. And for some of you, you struggle in your relationships because you messed this up. And now if you're a parent, now if you're getting to do this with kids, or if you're newly married, you have an opportunity to set a foundation and say, "Hey, listen, in this household, no matter what you do, I will always love you." That, oh, wow, yeah, you can clap for that. So once you have the foundation of unconditional acceptance and love, then in a house you build the framework. And last week we built the walls. We talked about the framework of healthy relationships. And I am believing that you're going to remember, it was just last week. Can anyone just shout out, what is the framework of healthy relationships? Yes, you guys nailed that one. That is awesome. Communication. The frame of healthy relationships is communication. Once you have the foundation, then you can build upon that by communicating. And this is a series. If you had to miss one of the weeks, go back and listen to the podcast because it builds on each one. And the way that you communicate to one another, that is the framework for having a healthy relationship. And for some of you, the reason that you are so passive-aggressive or so aggressive, or you just play unfair by giving the silent treatment, or sometimes your words are hurting others, the reason is because you've come from an environment without a solid foundation. And so you got to get the foundation right. Once the foundation is right, then you can build the framework by saying words that are life-giving to your family. Well, once you have the framework down, then the next thing that you build is the roof. And the roof of healthy relationships is trust. Everyone, just humor me, and would you just say trust on the count of three? One, two, three. Trust. Trust. Our text for the day is written by a guy by the name of Paul. Oftentimes, we'll call him the Apostle Paul. And if you're new to the church scene, you may not know Paul or why he's so important, but he's so important to us because he wrote over half of the New Testament, and he really introduced the word grace and the understanding of God's grace and God's unconditional love. He introduced those concepts to us, and so Paul is incredibly important for us and our understanding of God. Well, Paul wrote two letters to the church in Corinth, and the church in Corinth, he wrote two letters to them because they were incredibly jacked up. If you ever want to feel good about your faith, if you want to feel good about your relationship with God, read his letters to the church and to the Corinthians, because they were some messed up people. They were fighting over things like spiritual gifts and speaking in tongues. They had issues with spiritual authority. They had issues with morality and the way that they were doing things that were just incredibly ungodly. And Paul addresses it. He doesn't write just one letter. He writes two letters. And oftentimes we forget about all the drama of Corinthians because Corinthians is most known for chapter 13. In fact, if you had a wedding and you grew up in church, or maybe even if you didn't grow up in church, the pastor probably talked about 1 Corinthians 13 in your wedding. In the church world, we often call 1 Corinthians the what chapter? The love chapter. And we just love 1 Corinthians 13. In fact, if you had a grandma who grew up in the church, she probably has a plaque somewhere that has 1 Corinthians 13 on it. And it's like, we love 1 Corinthians 13. But what we forget is that 1 Corinthians 13 was written to address some major issues in the church family. And the answer that Paul is getting to is, listen, we could have principles, we could set up structures, we could have systems, I could yell and scream at you, we could do all this sort of stuff, but if you want to fix what's going on in the church, if you want to fix what's wrong with your church family, you got to get to love. Love is the answer. And so in 1 Corinthians 13, he addresses so many problems, and the answer is love. And I want us to read a little bit before our main text, and then we're going to lead into our text. 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7, you can follow along in YouVersion or up on the screen. Paul wrote, love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud. It does not dishonor others, it is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. And I want to stop there just for a second, because if you're really familiar with this verse, if you grew up in church, it's easy to just dismiss what this verse is saying. But ultimately what Paul is doing is Paul is giving a definition and a description of who God is. And if we want to receive love, we've got to receive these characteristics from him. God is patient. And you can just put God's name wherever it says love, you can just replace it. God is patient. God is kind. And all of that stuff makes so much sense to me. I'm far from perfect, but when I look at my relationships, I can say, yeah, they need a little bit more of this. I fall short of love when I'm not patient with my wife, when I'm not patient with my kids. I fall short of love when I'm not kind to people. I fall short of love when I envy. And so you look through this whole list and you're like, all of that makes so much sense to me that if I have these things or if I don't have these things, it doesn't match love. But then Paul gets to the end of it, and it's the end that I kind of have some question. It's the end where I just pull up the brakes and say, yeah. I don't know, Paul. Everything else is great. Everything else is awesome. I totally see it and I agree with it. But there's a couple words at the end that I think you might have made a mistake. Look at what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13, 7. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Paul says that love always trusts. Now, if you've ever been in a relationship with anyone, that you know that this is kind of a dangerous territory, that love doesn't always trust, that there are some people who harm you. There are some people who have been evil, have been malicious. There are some people that have some addictions and they've taken advantage of you. There's some people who are codependent and they've been struggling in their relationship and they're just harming you over and over again. And it's like, I love you, but I can't trust you. But what does Paul say? Paul says that love always trusts. And when I read that, I'm like, Paul, maybe you miss this one. Like everything else I can get on board with, but love does not always trust. There are some times when you're like, I love you, but I don't trust you. Well, there is, though, another translation of this verse that I think gets to a better understanding of what Paul was saying. What Paul was saying, another translation says, believes all things. That the heartbeat of what Paul was saying is that when you love someone, when you're in a relationship with them, you believe the best about them. It doesn't mean that you trust everything. It doesn't mean that, especially if someone's hurt you over and over again, it doesn't mean that you allow someone to take advantage of you. It means that in a healthy relationship, in order to set up a roof that protects you from all the elements of the weather and make sure that everything in your house is functioning properly, if you want to have a great relationship with a great roof, what it's going to involve is that you choose to believe the best about the person you're married to. Or you're going to choose to believe the best about your parents. Or you're going to choose to believe the best about your kids. There are some times when you might say, you know, you've let me down so many times, we need to talk about this, but I still believe in you. Now, I want to talk about this trust because there are a few of you who have been burned because you've been in unhealthy relationships. Maybe you were in an abusive relationship. Maybe you were just in a toxic relationship. And so trust is really hard for you. And if that's you, I want you to kind of just take yourself out of what I'm about to say. Because I think those are some special cases, and I think there's some extra forgiveness and grace that needs to go on there, and there might be some more boundaries that need to be set up for you. I want to talk, though, to how most of us deal with our relationships. most of us are not in a relationship with our kids, our spouse, or mom and dad that has some toxic activity. Most of us are not in positions where it's like someone is trying to hurt us. And yet most of us lack giving trust to the people that we're supposed to be closest with. And I want to talk about that because I think that trust is eroded so often simply because we don't like it when people do things that we wouldn't do. We trust people when they act like us, when they talk like us, when they make decisions like we would make. We lack trust when we can't control someone. And for so many marriages, when you look at your husband, other people would say, he's a great guy, he's a great dad, he is a great hard worker. But when you get around your husband, you're like, I'm just so mad at him. He doesn't do what I've told him to do. He doesn't act, he does things differently than the way that I would do it. And I want you to just test me on this. The next time you get angry in a relationship and you go to vent to someone that is not the person you're angry with, I want you to think about the words that you say. And so often when you go to vent to your sister about your husband, or you go to vent to your guy friends about your wife, or you go to vent on Facebook about your kids or whoever you vent to, so often the conversation will go like this. I can't believe he said that. I would never say that to him. Now, the issue is not the words that he used. The issue is that he said something that you would not say. He did something differently than you. Or maybe you've said this before. I can't believe she did that. She is always late. She never takes my feelings in consideration. I would never be that rude to her. Anytime you get upset, if you start looking at the heart of it, there's a chance that maybe the person's evil, maybe the person is bad, but so often in our relationships, they start to break down because there's holes in the roof, and the holes in the roof come from mistrust. And the mistrust is simply saying, you didn't do it the way that I wanted it done. I sent you to the store to get milk, and you came back with 20 things. I can't trust you to go to the grocery store anymore. I asked you to clean the dishes in the sink before I got home. And when I got home, the dishes were still there. I would never do that to you. I don't trust you anymore. You said you were going to be there and you weren't there. You said you were going to come home at 5 and you came home at 5:30. I'm angry with you because I would never, ever do that to you. When trust is built on my ability to anticipate what you are going to do, it will be broken when you don't do things like I do. When trust is built on my ability to anticipate what you are going to do, it will be broken when you don't do things like I do. And I want you to think about in your relationships why you're so frustrated with the people you're supposed to love the most. Is it because they're evil people? Maybe. Is it because they're broken and selfish? Maybe. But most likely, you're married or you have some really good kids and then there's some good people in your life and you're constantly frustrated with them, and the bottom line is you can't control them. They do something that is different than you, and it just drives you crazy. And you get so upset. And at the bottom of it, it's just like, I don't know if I can trust you. I've asked you to do this, and you didn't do it. And now there's brokenness in our relationship. This is incredibly important for us because this is not just a human relationship thing. This has to do with our relationship with God. And I just want to just speak to you guys for just a second. There are so many in here. When life goes well, you love God, but the second there's something, a challenge in life, the second something doesn't go your way, you start to push God away and say, God, I would never have done it that way. God, you must not love me because I would have done things differently. And for some of you, you've gone through long periods where you've pushed God away, where you said, I don't want to have anything to do with God because you can't believe he would allow you to have that miscarriage, or you can't believe he would allow you to get fired from that job, or you can't believe he would allow you to get into that car accident. You can't believe, and you just raise your fist at God and say, God, you're not good. You don't have my best interest in mind, because if I was God, I wouldn't have done it that way. And if you're here today and you want a healthy relationship with God, you've got to admit to yourself that you are not God. And because you're not God, you will never do things the way that God does. We can't control God. What we can is we can trust God. And we can trust that even in instances where it doesn't make sense, even in instances where we're like, wow, that's really complicated, God, I wouldn't have done it that way, But I'm going to hold on to the fact that I do believe that you're good, and I do believe that you love me. This doesn't make sense. I'm a little mad at you right now. I'm a little frustrated, but I'm not going to push you away because I trust you. I trust, even though you're doing things differently, I trust that you love me. When someone in your family lets you down, you make a choice to either move closer or further away from them. When someone in your family lets you down, you make a choice to either move closer or further away from them. And isn't this difficult? When your family lets you down, when your family hurts you, isn't the first reaction to push them away and say, well, if you hurt me that way, let me show you what I'm going to do to you. But a healthy relationship with a strong roof says, hey, listen, you're pushing me away. I'm going to pull you in. And I'm going to try to build your trust. And listen, I have unconditional love for you. You're making life really complicated right now. But I'm going to hold on. I'm going to hold on to you. Now, I want to show you, just in case you're missing why this is so important, I want to show you what Paul says one more time, because he does something that I think is crucial for us when it comes to relationships. Paul says at the very end of the verse, it's going to come on the screens, he says, love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the, what's that word? It always protects, always, what's that word? Always hopes, always perseveres. Now, in this long list of a description about God, the only word that is repeated is trust. And I want to give you a little clue into the Bible, that if you're reading the Bible, especially if you're new to it, it can be an intimidating book to read, and maybe you don't know where to start. Well, if you're reading the Bible and an author repeats something, you need to underline that. You need to make note of this and say, okay, everything in here is important, but this must be extra special. If an author is repeating something, this is an idea he really wants me to get. And in the idea where Paul gives a description and a definition of love, he uses the word trust two different times. This is something that we cannot skip over. In fact, I don't know if Paul knew the psychology of how humans are wired, but now psychology has actually caught up to what Paul has been saying for thousands of years. There's a recent TED Talk that's been going around, and I've seen a couple people share it on Facebook. And in the TED Talk, a psychologist is talking about what kids need. And so often in our world, we think that kids need like the best education, and we need to push them towards sports and keep them busy so they can have a great future. And we think that kids need all of these things. And according to this leading researcher, she says that the number one things that kids need in their family is unconditional love. I love it when psychology catches up with what the Bible's been saying for years. I want to show you this because this idea of needing trust and wanting trust, it is how you were born. And for some of you, because you've had your needs not met, it's caused you to not trust things that are very trustworthy. This is a graphic, and this is how all of us are born. This is infant attachment cycle. And when you're born, you cannot communicate, and so the baby has a need. And the baby, the way to meet that need is to cry. And so if the baby has to go to the bathroom, it cries. If the baby's already gone to the bathroom, it cries. If the baby's hungry, it cries. If the baby just needs to be held, the baby cries. And the baby's communicating to mom and dad, or mom, or just dad, I need help. I need something. When the caregiver meets that need, trust is developed in the baby, and this cycle continues on. Now, I want to show you what happens when trust is not met at infancy. This is an infant trauma cycle. Baby has a need, baby cries. The need is not met by the caregiver, and mistrust develops. This same pattern that starts when we're babies, it continues through adulthood. And in our adult relationships, you have a need. And if you don't know how to express your need, sometimes you just cry, sometimes you yell, you scream, sometimes you give them the silent treatment. You don't know how to put words to what you need, but you need something, and you want the other person to meet your needs. And when they don't meet your needs, mistrust develops. And for some of you, you're in really good relationships, and you have really good families, but you just don't trust them because they don't do things the way that you would want them to be done. And so often when it comes to our families, especially those that are closest to us, we just assume that they can read our minds, that they know what we need, and we forget that we have to actually communicate with them. I love this quote by Pastor Danny Silk. He says, if you cannot communicate your needs to another person clearly, it is obviously going to be very difficult for that person to meet them. That's why one of the primary tasks of reaching maturity is learning how to express thoughts, feelings, and needs. Maturity is not just growing older, it's not getting gray hair, it's not having another birthday. Maturity is learning how to express your needs to the people that are in your life. So what are your needs? You communicate your needs. What you're doing is you're trusting them to take care of you. Now, Again, this isn't just a principle for your family. This is a principle for your relationship with God. I don't know if you've ever thought about prayer, or maybe you've wrestled with prayer, but one thing I often hear from people about prayer is they just wrestle with, why should I pray? If God already knows my needs, and if God's in control, and God already knows everything that I'm going to need, why should I pray? You don't have to raise your hand, but have you ever thought that? Have you ever wondered, like, why do I need to talk to God? Why do I need to tell Him what I need if God already knows everything? Well, the Christian God is a relational God, and this is something that separates Him from every other God that's out there. So many of the other gods are about control and power, and if you do X, Y, and Z, then He'll love you and He'll bless you, but if you don't follow everything, then He's going to curse you and hurt you. But the Christian God says that He wants an actual relationship with you. And the Christian God says, yeah, even though I know everything that you need, I want to have a relationship with you. And we can't have a relationship if you don't trust me enough to open up your chest and say, God, this is what I need. This is incredibly important. You cannot have a relationship with someone else if you are not willing to trust them with your needs. You cannot. You cannot have a relationship with someone else if you are not willing to trust them with your needs. And some of you have been so hurt by a faulty foundation and so hurt in your relationships that you don't know how to trust other people with your needs. But every healthy relationship says, you're in my life, this is what I need. I love you so much that I'm going to trust you with my feelings. So here's what I need. I need you to go to the store and I need you just to get milk. Please don't come back with 20 other things. Now, why is this so difficult? Well, it's so difficult because your personality, how you are wired, is sometimes in contrast to the people God's put into your life. And so it is so easy to think, well, this is just the way that I would do it. I don't need to express my needs. Like for some of you, you are born a type A personality. And if you don't know what a type A personality is, the best, and I'm not trying to be mean here, but the best way to explain type A is you're just a little anal. Like type A personalities, they're just kind of strict by things. And like if the meeting starts at 9, you feel like you're late if you show up anywhere past 5 minutes before the meeting time. Like, if you're not there at 8:55, you feel like you're late, and you get angry at people when they show up a minute after the meeting. Now, you're probably, most likely, married to a type B personality. And a type B personality says, if the meeting starts at 9, as long as I'm there within 5-10 minutes of the meeting starting, I'm okay. And so what happens in a relationship? Well, in a relationship, it drives you crazy that your spouse can never be on time anywhere. And you say, we got to get to the wedding, we got to get to that meeting, it starts at 9, and you know that somehow your spouse is going to sabotage it and you're going to end up late, and you just say, I can't trust you. And it's so easy to start pushing people away because they would do things differently than the way that we have done it. And oftentimes, we push them away before we've ever communicated, this is a need that I have. And I've never expressed it to you, and I'm not going to get mad at you, I'm not going to yell at you, I just want to sit down and say, listen, God has wired me to be anal. And I need for us to get there on time. And I'm going to trust you with that information. Or for some of you, maybe it's, hey, listen, God has wired me to be really laid back. I promise you I'm going to get to it. I promise you I'm going to do it. It may not be as fast as you want, but this is just how God has wired me. And I need you to trust that if I say I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. Trust is built when both people choose to express their needs and both people choose to meet the other person's need. Trust is built when both people choose to express their needs and both people choose to meet the other person's need. This is how trust is built. You tell me what your needs are, and because I love you, I say I'm going to meet those needs. And now I get to be vulnerable and trust you and say, this is what I need, and because you love me, you're going to meet my needs. When both people do that, trust is built in the relationship, and you have a roof that even when the storms of life come, it's going to withstand it, and water's not going to get in. But until that happens, there's some separation in your relationship, and as soon as the storms of life come and things start shaking, your whole place gets flooded, and you freak out, and your whole house comes tumbling down. I want to give you, to close, something that you can do about this. These are very practical. These are given by another pastor who has some great insight. And these are three commitments that you can give to help fill the gap whenever there's mistrust in your relationship, when someone does something that you don't want them to do. These are three things that you can do. This is your application. This is what you can work on. Three commitments. Number one, when there is a gap between what I see and what I experience, I will fill it with trust. This is the kind of stuff, listen, I can say this is good because I didn't come up with this. This is really good stuff that I would encourage you to write down and take some notes on. When there's a gap between what I see and what I experience, I will fill it with trust. What does that mean? Well, when I said, hey, I need you to clean up the dishes in the sink, and I come home and they're not cleaned, I'm going to choose how I respond to that. And I'm going to believe the best about you. Maybe you are lazy. Maybe you're an incompetent, or maybe something major happened, and I want to have a conversation with you before I jump to a conclusion that you're the worst human being in the history of the world. In communication, isn't it easy to jump to the worst conclusion? You said you were going to do it, you didn't do it, and so now you must be evil. And what would happen if we just committed to, when there's a gap between what you say and what you do, I'm going to believe the best about you. I'm going to believe that you didn't mean to make us late for that meeting for the 100th time. Something must have come up. I'm going to choose to believe the best about you. Number two, when I see others filling the gap with suspicion, I'm going to come to your defense. When I see others filling the gap with suspicion, I'm going to come to your defense. If you're married, the temptation is to go to your sister or go to your mom or go to your brother and to vent about your spouse. And after years, they've taken on all this weight of all the negativity that you've been just spouting about your spouse or about your kids. And now all of a sudden they come to you and they say, yeah, you're married to a knucklehead. Yeah, he did mean to do that. I can't believe he's not meeting your needs. And when anyone comes at you with someone you love, you decide, hey, I'm going to fill that gap. I'm going to come to your defense. Listen, my husband's not an idiot. No, my husband takes great care of us. No, my wife is not a nag. You should see her. She is a great mom. She's a great wife. I'm not going to let you talk about my spouse. I'm not going to let you talk about my kids that way. And number three, if what I see begins to erode my trust, I will come directly to you. This is the one that is so crucial, and this is one that we often forget. Because we're bad with communication, when someone doesn't meet our needs, when someone doesn't meet our expectations, what do? We go to everyone else except for the person that can actually do something about it. And if you would commit to just this one commitment, when you don't meet my trust, when you don't meet my expectations, I'm going to come directly to you. Your relationships would be radically changed. So how can you build trustworthiness? And these are the final notes for today. Three commitments to be trustworthy. Number one, I commit to do what I say I'll do, and when I don't, I'll come to you. Now for some of you, your spouse doesn't trust you because you say, I'm going to do it, and you never do it. And you say, well, that's just the way God's wired me. And like for some of you, you have a thing called a smartphone. It comes with a calendar. You need to put things in there, reminders. Buy milk on the way home. I don't want to forget again. I'm married to a type A person. I don't want to let her down. I don't want to let him down. I'm going to do everything I can. I'm going to write it as a tattoo on my arm. I will not forget. I am not going to let them down in this way. But when I do, I'll come to you. Now, the reason we don't come to people in our lives is because we don't have a healthy foundation of unconditional acceptance and love. And oftentimes, when you let someone down, you're so afraid to be chewed out or to be yelled at, you decide, well, I'll just hide this from them. But a healthy relationship is where you trust one another and you can say, hey, listen, I know I said I was going to be home at 5 and I got home at 5:15. I'm coming to you first. I'm sorry. I dropped the ball. Number two, I commit to not under-promise and to over-deliver. But when that happens, I'll tell you. Now, let me explain this one. I commit to not under-promise. This is sometimes we get very ambitious with things and we say, honey, I will mow the lawn and I'll trim the bushes and I'll weedy, and then she comes home, and we forgot because we were watching a football game, and we have under-delivered. We have promised big, delivered small. And in a relationship, what is healthy is you say, I'm going to mow the lawn, and then you mow the lawn. If you have time to mow the lawn and weedy, you are over-delivering. You are bringing more to the relationship. And the more that you over-deliver, the more trust you build. But when you're not able to do what you say you're going to do, when you under-deliver, you're going to come to them and say, hey, listen, I thought I would have time to weedy, and I just didn't. I'm sorry. I'll get to it tomorrow. Number three, if you confront me about the gaps I've created, I'm going to tell you the truth. How defensive are we as people? And isn't it hard when someone does have the guts to come to us and say, hey, listen, you said you were going to clean the dishes and you didn't. Isn't it easy to say, well, let me tell you about what you did, and let me tell you what you forgot. And isn't it easy to like snap back at them? But a trustworthy person owns up to it and says, listen, when you come to me, I'm sorry. I dropped it.
I said I was going to do the dishes, and I totally forgot. I said I was going to paint the shutters, and I just forgot. I'm sorry. I'm going to make it up to you. And then to make it up to you, you do whatever you can to make sure that it gets done, because you want to be a trustworthy person. If both people in the relationship commit to being vulnerable and sharing their needs, and both people commit to meet those needs, you build trust. And when there's trust in the relationship, you have a roof that protects your family from the elements. But as long as there's mistrust, you are allowing the winds and the waves and the crashing of the thunder of the life to simply destroy what's inside of your home. And no one can do this for you. You've got to choose to build a family with trust. Will you guys pray with me? God, thank you for this day. Thanks for giving us practical challenges. And we just ask right now that you would just do something in our hearts and our lives, God. It's so easy to be frustrated with the people in our lives simply because they don't do what we want them to do. And so right now, God, we're just asking that it would start with you. We ask, God, that you would help us to trust you. That's not easy. God, some of us are hurting because we wanted you to deliver and you just didn't deliver. And so we ask that you would build trust in our relationship. We ask you'd help us to not be such control freaks. We ask you'd help us to work hard to having a relationship with unconditional acceptance and love. We thank you that you modeled it first so that we could do it for our families. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net or find us on Facebook or Twitter.